It's morning again in America. Today, more women will go to work than ever before in our country's history. This year, dozens of children will be born to happy and healthy families. It's morning again.
It's morning again.
It's morning again.
Wake up, America. Morning's over.
Oh, what a dark twist!
Welcome to Cord Killers, the show about watching the stuff you love when you want, where you want, however you want. I am Tom Merritt, back stateside. How's it going, Brian?
Yeah, man. And man, just swimming in that bandwidth, aren't you? Just, yeah. You got so many megabits.
Soaking in bits.
Hey, last time I checked, didn't The Handmaid's Tale not take place in America, but instead a land called Gilead?
Which is what used to be America. So I guess for the purposes of a Super Bowl commercial, and if you really want to parody a Reagan election commercial, you just overlook that.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Yeah, fair enough.
if you're in the pitch meeting and someone says, but it's Gilead, you say, but morning in America. People don't want to hear morning in Gilead.
Yeah, right? well, especially because this is one of those like gotcha switcheroos, like, ha-ha, you thought this was a feel-good commercial. It's not.
By the way, another Jay Martin already on top of me for saying stateside when I was in Hawaii, which is a state. Whatever. I'm sorry. Mainland side. I'm back. I'm back where there's bandwidth. Okay?
Hey, yeah. You know what? Here on this show, we don't recognize anything but the contiguous 48, man.
Well,
continental U.S.
I believe in Hawaii is still a kingdom. That's what Brian's trying to say.
That's right. We never acknowledged our inappropriate annexation of those islands.
That's why I always bring a visa with me.
And
it's everywhere I want to be. Let's start with our primary target this time. This news that broke in the middle of the week last week is sort of a great example of overreactions and people jumping to outrage for no reason. The Digital Entertainment Content Ecosystem, or DECE, announced it's shutting down the Ultraviolet service as of July 31st. Now, up until this announcement was made, everyone disdained Ultraviolet and said, who uses that? But as soon as DECE announced it was getting rid of Ultraviolet, then everyone said, what about my movies? Oh, I guess I shouldn't rely on things because you can't own anything in this digital ecosystem. Here's the thing. After July 31st, any movies you bought and linked through Ultraviolet will remain available in all your linked retail stores. So if you bought an Ultraviolet movie in Vudu and you linked it to Fandango Now, it'll be there in both places. It's just that anything you buy after July 31st that is in the Ultraviolet system now won't be linked. So after July 31st, only Movies Anywhere will link things between your different stores. Ultraviolet linked accounts are like 30 million users, 300 million movies and TV shows in the cloud library. So it's not insignificant. But people really reacted as if they were deleting your movies from your accounts, which they're definitely not doing.
I think you are mistaking their reaction for the words that they're saying. Yes, the words that they're saying, and I understand why you would do this. The words that they are saying
listening to the things they're saying and taking them at face value.
Hey, right? Man.
That is my first mistake.
This is correct. An ongoing subject of debate between me and the missus, is I have learned that I am not to listen to the words that are said, but instead the ideas being said. Between the lines, what people are really saying is the moment you introduced Ultraviolet, we said, we don't trust you. You are telling us that ownership will be a thing, and yet it will require your consortium to support all of these things. At the time that Ultraviolet came out, we pointed to examples of, Windows Media licenses and all of this stuff. It's like, look, we understand that you're trying to promote a digital version of ownership because you want to keep that sweet, sweet DVD, Blu-ray money train going and decouple it from physical goods and instead make them virtual goods. We said, and I say we because I was one of the skeptics early on, we said, that's fine for you to say words, 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 words. I don't trust you. And now here we are, 6 years later,
but
proven right not to trust them.
No, you're not right not to trust them. They're doing exactly what you should have wanted them to do, which is if ultraviolet goes away, you don't lose anything.
Sure, sure, sure.
And you don't lose anything. The things that you quote unquote own, which I'm just as skeptical. I'm just as wide open on digital ownership, where it's not really ownership as anybody else. But they're not deleting things. They're very actively going out and saying, don't unlink ultraviolet before July 31st or you will lose things. They're doing all the things they should to say, we're just not going to provide this service. And guess what? The reason they're not providing it anymore is not what they'll say, but I'll guarantee you the reason they're not providing it anymore is because Movies Anywhere is a better version. And they're saying, you know what? We give up. There's no reason to have ultraviolet when Movies Anywhere is a better version of this, which you can also link your services to. So I really don't see this as an example of the skepticism being borne out.
Well,
because the skepticism was, if I buy it, will I lose access to it? And you're not. You're not even losing access to it across platforms. You're just not going to be able to buy new things through that system. You'll have to use a different system.
The skepticism, as I remember it, basically distilled down to one statement. I don't believe you. And the only way for ultraviolet to work is for them to have kept their promise of, you know, being around forever. And they weren't.
What don't you believe?
I mean, I don't. At the time when they announced the scheme, the first thing I thought is, okay, this only works if you stick around forever to preserve these licenses.
But it's still going to work. You're still going to have access to your movies in all the stores you bought it through.
Correct.
Nothing that lasts forever. And this is the best ending to a system ever, because they're like, you get to keep everything. We're just not going to offer the service going forward. I think that's different than you have to be around forever for this to work, or I'll lose access to my movies. Nobody's losing access to movies.
Tom, I owned a Betamax and not a VHS. I owned a TurboGrafx-16 and not a Genesis. I was and am and continue to be deeply familiar with the pain of investing in a losing format. I probably would have bought an HD DVD. No. But the people who are upset are people who have experienced that pain and called it the moment ultraviolet came sashaying in, promising the same thing we've heard before. And it's like, I don't believe you, and I will not invest in your platform because it's too painful when your platform crumbles. And here we are with the platform shuttering.
It didn't crumble. The platform is still there. Okay. It's just not, building new platforms. Self-fulfilling prophecy of saying ultraviolet has to be around forever for me to believe in them. Oh, they're not around forever. I don't believe in them, when there is really no damage to this.
Okay. This, by that logic, there's no problem with having bought all your movies on Betamax instead of VHS because they still work. They still play everywhere.
If you bought all your movies on Betamax and they don't play in VHS, okay, fine. You bought these movies on Vudu or Fandango Now, they still play on all your devices. You don't have, I'm stuck with these Fandango Now movies and they won't play on a thing. No, it's not a format. It was a system that said, hey, if you buy it in this one store, you'll have it on all the stores just in case you want to access it from another store. And that was a cool thing that they're not even taking away retroactively. They're just saying, we're not going to have that linking anymore. But in the U.S. anyway, there's this other linking, Movies Anywhere, and maybe other systems will come up around the world.
Huh. Okay, well, this is where we turn to the audience and say, cordkillers@gmail.com. I apparently have failed to articulate the gestalt of frustration that I feel, but would love to hear your versions of all of
those. I just want to know what you're actually frustrated about.
Oh, no. It's not frustrated. It's I was right. I was right to be skeptical. I was right to not believe in you. What's that?
I still don't see how you were right to be skeptical, other than like, I don't think ultraviolet will last forever. Oh wait, it didn't. It only lasted a decade.
It didn't even last a quarter as long as, I mean, their whole purpose was to engender.
8-tracks going away was worse than this. It was a shorter period of time and people just stopped making 8-track players.
Sure, sure.
This is actually better because everything you bought still exists in your stores and you will have interminably.
Okay.
What would be bad is when one of these stores goes down and says, well, now you can't access the movie you bought anymore.
And again,
but that hasn't happened.
If you are asking people to invest in an architecture there is an implicit promise that you will maintain that architecture, and they are no longer maintaining it. And you're right. It will be a slow decay as stores change and new ones come in. And
you make
all
it
of those...
sound like you invested in an architecture that you had to pay something extra for Ultraviolet, or that Ultraviolet was a bet on a platform like Betamax. But it wasn't.
Well, okay.
Ultraviolet was just a benefit if you bought movies through certain stores from certain movie companies that said, hey, we'll, if you link your accounts, we'll make your movies available across platform.
But here's the whole thing is Ultraviolet was founded on the promise of, we understand you want complete ownership of your movies. We
I don't
guarantee
know if that's what the
ownership.
Promise was. I mean, the promise was you want access.
Okay.
Because here's why I'm fighting you so hard on this.
Sources I cannot confirm.
Issue. No. Listen to me. The reason I'm fighting you so hard on this is the ownership issue is related to the stores, not to Ultraviolet. Ultraviolet was never about ownership. Ultraviolet was always about extending access. If the stores change something with ownership, then that's where I'm also skeptical. Like, hey, man, is Fandango now going to be around forever? And what happens to my stuff in Fandango now if it goes away? But Ultraviolet was just saying, hey, as maybe a hedge against that, we'll also give you the movies in Vudu. And they're not taking those movies away. Those movies are still there. It's just future purchases won't be there. But there's also another system that you can use for a lot of the movies. And Ultraviolet didn't apply to all movies anyway. So I really don't see what people are losing by Ultraviolet going away, especially because nobody was using it.
Well, and maybe I have a different perspective because an unnamed source of mine who is in upper management at one of the companies in the consortium behind Ultraviolet flatly told me this is about ownership. It's about giving the same idea of ownership that DVDs and Blu-rays have, but in the digital format so that we can keep this ownership train money coming.
But I'm saying the ownership issue really rests in the stores because that's where the ownership is. And if you're not losing purchases from the stores, I don't think Ultraviolet going away is harming anyone nearly as much.
Well, and plus also, like at the end of the day, here's what you didn't say that I thought you were going to say is, look, by its very nature, it goes away because of a lack of interest in the thing. So it's affecting very few. The amount of people howling, including me, are not Ultraviolet customers. And so
if I was going to howl, it would be because Ultraviolet went away and I lost access to movies. Right. But Ultraviolet going away and people who didn't even use it howling, that just strikes me as disingenuous.
Well, I mean, what they're howling, again, don't listen to the words they're saying. Look at the words they mean. What they mean is, I was right to not trust this scheme. I was right because it ended up being another failed architecture. And
what harm did it cause?
Well, I mean, okay, what harm did it cause for Betamax to go away? What harm did it cause for
With Betamax 16? Going away is I could no longer buy machines to play my Betamax videos on. I no longer could continue to buy new things for Betamax.
Well, you
neither one of those are true in this case.
You still can't strip DRM from the Ultraviolet movies that you
that
have.
That was true before. Well, that was true in Ultraviolet. That's true of movies anywhere. That's true of every video. It's not specific to Ultraviolet. That is still true, even after Ultraviolet. And that is a legitimate problem, but it's not a problem with Ultraviolet.
Okay. Okay, look, if somebody is going to sell you on the idea of ownership of your stuff and they're going to it doesn't feel like ownership to me.
You still own all your things in all the stores you bought them in. They're just closing the store.
I'm out of juice on this one, Tom. I feel like you're trolling me at this point.
No, I'm not. I really just don't see any harm. And I think it's significant that, like you say, you never used Ultraviolet.
But again, nobody's saying, maybe we're arguing across purposes because I'm not saying anybody was harmed.
Do you not trust movies anywhere? Do you not believe that you should use movies anywhere?
I am saying that movies anywhere is not telling you that everything's going to be okay going forward. They're saying it's ours.
It's the same exact thing as Ultraviolet. I think also there may be a difference between you, possibly because you have an inside source, knowing intentions and assigning promises that I didn't know or assign.
If I'm understanding your thesis,
took Ultraviolet as saying we will always be here and ensure your purchases any more than I think Movies Anywhere isn't saying that. I just think, this is a system that allows me to access my stuff across platforms, and they're shutting it down in the responsible way, which is I don't lose access to anything. And there's another system that does this. And now I'm repeating myself.
Well,
so I
right,
think you're
correct,
right.
Correct. So here's the thing is you and I have two very different theses. Your thesis is nobody is being hurt by this shutdown. They're doing it in a responsible fashion. That is a fine thesis, and I will not dispute it. My thesis is the people crowing are not crowing because they're losing movies. They're crowing because they had a suspicion that this was a bad architecture to invest and buy into, and they have been proven right, and they are right to crow.
I don't know that they've been proven right. How is it? How was it
what
bad
would,
for me to buy into
hold
this?
On. What would prove them more right than the whole architecture stopping?
But again, I don't understand why it's bad that I bought into it.
You have always been a better person than me and never felt the petty sting of having bought the crappier of two platforms.
But again, this isn't that example. I guess that's the part that I just don't like. If this had been like, and now these will only play on certain platforms, I'd get you. But you're not losing anything.
Well, again. Stop ascribing a thesis that's not my thesis. My thesis is not that anybody's losing anything.
You just said that it would be like as if you had invested in something that no longer worked. But
yes, if you built
this totally
your whole,
still works.
If you built your whole library of your HD DVDs still work with your Xbox attachment peripheral.
Correct.
So you still feel like a stupid chump for having bought them. And so likewise,
but
if you dodged that.
Because when you bought HD DVD, you knew it didn't play on Blu-ray.
Well, yes.
And when you bought these movies from Vudu, you knew they play on everything, and they still do.
For the moment, but it's very clear that there's no support architecture
That's not an ultraviolet issue, though. That's a different issue.
Cordkillers@gmail.com.
Different topic.
I sincerely am frustrated at your constant attempts to recategorize my frustrations as something they're not. It's not. I'm not. You keep saying nobody's losing anything. I agree. That's not the issue. My Betamaxes didn't vanish magically. My TurboGrafx-16 didn't suddenly break itself.
Every time you bring it to physical media, that's where I get frustrated back and start recategorizing because I'm like, those aren't the same things.
Write me an email, Tom, at cornkillers@gmail.com and explain to me the difference.
It would just be all the things I just said.
All right.
Like, you still can play your thing everywhere.
Well,
Betamax
sure.
could only ever be played. Those were different things from the beginning. That's all.
Bryce, you were piping in.
Was ultraviolet, and this is more of a question before I get to my thing, was ultraviolet the main way that they were bundling digital copies with physical discs?
Yes, the universal way. It was a consortium, and you had to be on board. That's the other thing, is it was presented as a unified panacea, like we all got together and locked arms, and now it's going to be okay. You'll own your things.
So
just like Movies Anywhere does now.
So Movies Anywhere is picking up the digital
and
the
not
physical,
every not
digital
every
copy.
Studio was on board with ultraviolet not every movie was on
only
was
yeah
part of ultraviolet.
Disney was the big holdout and Disney
the idea was you'd have a digital copy and then you could go to any store that participated in ultraviolet and redeem it. You didn't have to go to one single store.
So
like prior to ultraviolet you had to go to iTunes to get your copy, and if you didn't use iTunes, well then you didn't get your copy.
So do you think that this will affect going forward physical discs being bundled with digital copies?
I mean, not for Movies Anywhere.
No,
Disney
they'll just
will
use Movies Anywhere
it.
Now because almost all the studios that were part of Ultraviolet are also part of Movies Anywhere.
Because I've only used Movies Anywhere a little bit, which you do link your store accounts to other things, but I haven't used it enough to know if there's actually a redemption element to Movies Anywhere's system.
No, okay. it's almost exactly the same thing. There were just slightly different players, especially back when it was Disney Movies Anywhere and it was just Disney.
Gotcha. Cool. Well, then... That's one question we solved. Hey, look at that.
Yay.
Look at that. Yay. You know what, folks? If you want Brian and I to understand each other better, you have to pay us.
Yeah, man. Look, we're very busy individuals. I've got to sell all these ultraviolet copies of all my movies that don't work anymore. Tom has to count all of his certificates of being right.
Oh,
this takes a lot of time, energy, and effort, and it's possible thanks to you beautiful bosses over at patreon.com/cornkillers.
No, seriously, folks, if you enjoy these spirited debates and you enjoy our coverage and us talking about the things we watch, you can get more of that. Actually, we have Spoiler in Time, which you get early, and After Talk, where we talk about just kind of, you know, general things around the production of the show and our lives and everything. And it's all available by supporting us at patreon.com/cordkillers. Shall we talk about how to watch?
Yeah.
U.S. law allows a nonprofit company, not a for-profit company like Aereo, but a nonprofit company to retransmit broadcast television networks without paying a fee. This is a way to help extend access of broadcast television without infringing on the money-making rights of broadcast television. A company called Locast is now doing just that over the internet in New York, Philadelphia, Boston, Chicago, Houston, Dallas, and Denver. They have to have one antenna in each region, but unlike Aereo, they don't have to try to claim they have a single antenna for every subscriber because they're a nonprofit. So they have the right to retransmit. Locast is available on the Roku, is supported through donations. They've gotten some big donations from people. It's questionable whether they'll be able to sustain this, but there's also a little caginess over whether the broadcast networks want to challenge them in court, because if they lost, it could embolden other companies to, as nonprofits, go in and do the same thing.
So it sounds to me that this is a case where, per the letter of the law, it's fairly unambiguous. Many of the articles that I read on this had headlines that says they claim that it's okay because they're a nonprofit. But it sounds to me like it's fairly unambiguous, like straight up, if they're a nonprofit, they're able to do this.
Yeah, I guess there's a little wiggle room in there if because the internet allows things at a scale that have never been imagined before, a judge could say, well, okay, the letter of the law says this, but the spirit of the law was never to rebroadcast across an entire internet this way. And so there's a potential they could have a ruling go against them, but it's pretty clear that a nonprofit company can retransmit this in order to encourage access. And that's what Locast is arguing, is like, we're just doing that over the internet, but it's exactly, we're not trying to pretend like we have antennas or anything weird like that. So they're in a stronger position, legally speaking. I think the thing that has prevented this from being offered up before now is you had to be a nonprofit. And a lot of companies and startups are like, yeah, well, we're in this for the profit, so we're definitely not going to do this. But Locast has decided, you know what, we want to be a nonprofit company that does this just to provide access for people.
So nonprofit means that at the end of the year, they can't just be raking in stuff and then disperse it to shareholders or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to claim to be an expert in nonprofits, but generally speaking, it means that any salaried members of the company, have to have reasonable salaries. No dividends can be paid out to people. No investors can recoup investments.
Now, having said that, though, what they can do is, let's say they start pulling in, like, you know, NPR is a very valuable brand, and they solicit donations, and I'm sure they rake in a fair bit. But what they do is they reinvest a lot of those on speculative new intellectual properties.
And you have to do that, right?
Correct. So basically, the only rule is they have to spend all the money at the end of the year. They can rake in mad amounts of cash. They just have to spend it by the end of the year. By starting with these, what, seven stations, I think we said, they are nine. They can immediately, that's your business plan, is rake in tons and tons of money. Just make sure you spend it all on building new Locast repeaters all across the country. I mean, that's a 6 to 10 year growth strategy that spends all of the money coming in, and everybody in their head is like, yeah, $5 a month, I'm happy to sign up for that.
Well, and that's the other thing. I don't think they can charge you $5 a month.
They can't charge you. They can have a suggested donation. And I think enough people, and of course they can spend, one of the ways they can spend all that money is with an awful lot of emails reminding you of how important your support to Locast is. So
like PBS, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Again, we're at the NPR public radio thing. So I think they're in really good shape. I think this is something everybody wants. I think that they've found the right legal territory. I think that I believe, I'm sure, let's say the CEO makes, even if the CEO pulls in $250,000 a year or whatever, good for him. It's an important public service that they're doing to make local broadcasts available to everybody over the chosen devices of their preference.
Yeah. And it requires people who want to do this because they want to provide it, not because they want to get rich, right? You can't get rich doing this. That's the whole point of a nonprofit company. But if you have enough people that want to get together and do this, and you can sustain the donations. I think, you know, yes, we talked about it just now as if, oh, if you rake in enough money, you can reinvest it. That will probably be less of a problem than getting enough money to keep going. And right. that's generally true of public broadcasting situations already. But if they can show this is sustainable, and if they were challenged in court and won, then it would certainly encourage broadcast networks to come to the table to more streaming services. Although most of the broadcast networks in the US are available in most places, they're not available in all. This might shove the rest of them to Hulu, PlayStation View, et cetera, because it will still be more convenient for someone to get a PlayStation View or Hulu Live or a YouTube TV subscription and get everything in one package than say, well, I have Locast for broadcast and then I have this other one for the other stuff.
Also, how unbelievably cost efficient must this be? Your only expense is pretty much bandwidth, right? You get a little bit of decent hardware, you get a guy in each city, and the rest is all bandwidth.
Well, it's like YouTube, right? You know, you say the rest is all bandwidth, but there's a lot of cost goes into server management, and you know, BAM is an entire company built on making sure streaming video is available to all the people who want to watch it at once. So conceivably, this could become costly if it got popular.
Is it the craziest? And again, I don't want to damn this with even the speculation of this, because I think this is a good idea and I hope everybody is on board and donates to it. But is it possible that 5 years from now, this is in every single city? And is there a precedent? I assume there is, to being a nonprofit company and then, you know, talking to enough legislators, spending enough money on lobbying and being able to get the laws adjusted and then being able to flip to a for-profit company?
I mean, sure. I don't see why that couldn't happen technically.
Yeah.
If there's a lot of ifs. If you can make enough money,
right.
If you can get legislation, that the big one would be getting legislative support for this, because these companies are going to probably have a problem making enough money to continue operations without necessarily having the dough to start lobbying. But anything's possible, right?
Yeah, could be. And then there could be nonprofit competitors, like local municipalities could, you know, take it out of their own budget.
Yeah,
to throw
and
this
I think that's why the broadcast networks are wary about suing, because if they bring them to court and lose, suddenly municipalities will look at this as like a legitimate risk-free, because it's been proven in court, way to provide access to the community. That's an interesting take. I hadn't even thought of that. The Information says its sources, Brian, say that Apple, Brian, has told its TV production partners to be ready for launch by mid-April.
It's going to be great, Tom. It's going to be great. Apple TV, it's going to be amazing.
The service is supposed to launch within several weeks of mid-April, so maybe May. Don't forget, Disney is expected to show its own streaming service to investors on April 11th, so it might be a coup for Apple to be showing off its own service right around that time, too. Disney service isn't launching till later this year, so if they did launch within a few weeks of an announcement, that would give them the one-up on that. I mean, this is the year where we're getting the big services, right? There's no more CISOs. There's no more messing around and experimenting. We're getting Disney. We're getting Turner. We're getting NBC. And it looks like we're getting Apple.
Yeah. It's going to be great.
I appreciate your positivity, but I'm skeptical.
What? You're not losing anything if it's not great.
I have been promised by Apple high quality programming, and I won't listen. I won't watch any of it. But I will not get into this ecosystem.
He doesn't want to feel like a chump, Brian.
Yeah, I understand the sentiment.
I'll be very happy if this is true. And by May, we have a service that we can actually say, oh, I have watched a thing on it, and now I can evaluate it instead of this constant parade of big names being signed. In fact, talking about what to watch, let's talk about what to watch in Under Surveillance.
I like real estate. It's all about location.
Under Surveillance.
Jordan Peele's reboot of The Twilight Zone is coming to CBS All Access April 1st. They'll release two episodes right away, and then new episodes will start coming out weekly as of April 11th. Also heading to CBS All Access March 14th is season 3 of The Good Fight, the Good Wife spinoff, and a series based on The Stand by Stephen King is being produced. No date on when that arrives, though.
I gotta tell you, I think we speculated about this strategy early on. Basically, create enough stuff behind the paywall that, of course, it's not going to be something super appealing at launch, but we're getting closer and closer to where now it's like access to, like, well, that's another book I'm going to get around to reading. That's another title I'm going to get around to absorbing. And then, you know, I still don't think, even with The Twilight Zone from Jordan Peele and the Stephen King Stand remake, I still don't know that it's enough to get me in, but it's getting closer. At least now the question that people are debating is, how soon do you cancel your CBS mm-hmm. All Access rather than do you dare to give them even a dollar?
Well, and to me, I look at these things as just little boxes and like, okay, what do I get for my money? Showtime, I subscribed to watch Twin Peaks The Return. And then when Twin Peaks The Return was done, there wasn't anything I wanted to watch and I canceled it.
Right.
Stars, I will probably cancel after Counterpart is done and then leave it on pause until probably Outlander comes back because Eileen and I watch Outlander. But maybe not. There may be something grab my attention. HBO, on the other hand, I always leave subscribed because True Detective or Insecure or, you know, there's always something, even though Game of Thrones isn't on all the time, sure. There's something that's like, well, you know what? I probably want to watch that, or I'm watching Deadwood, so I'll keep it. So that's what CBS needs to do. And none of these things will ever work for everybody. Some people out there are like, I wouldn't keep HBO for those shows. And of course not, because we don't all have the same taste. CBS had The Good Fight and Star Trek Discovery. Not a huge overlapping audience, one would expect. There may be a few. But now Twilight Zone definitely overlaps with Star Trek Discovery. And suddenly somebody who's about to cancel because of Star Trek Discovery goes, well, wait a minute, I do want to watch Twilight Zone. And then The Stand comes along. You can see where whether it works for you or not personally, there is a person out there that says, you know what, I'm just going to leave the subscription on because I want to see all this stuff.
Yep. And for me, I would say that my soft spot probably goes to, strangely, Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, even though you could watch the meat of it, like, I think there's all of like 3 minutes that aren't in the YouTube things that they uh-huh. post every week, but there's something about like just knowing it's there for whenever I just need, you know, something to fill the time and that is constantly updating.
A new Captain Marvel teaser was released, a bunch of teasers released in the Super Bowl. We're going to talk about all of them. Not much new in this teaser. They did use the higher, further, faster tagline for the first time in a teaser. Captain Marvel arrives at March 8th.
Yay.
Yeah. I'm kind of the same way. Like,
I mean, I've reached that. I mean, there's no question that I'm going to see it. And so like really all I have is to lose by more of this in my life.
Avengers Endgame actually had the sweet spot right before kickoff. TV teaser focusing on the heroes still in action after the end of the last Avengers movie. Endgame's coming out April 26th. Probably the same thing, right?
Yes. I watched it because I felt an obligation to watch this trailer, but really did my best to forget it instantly. Did we talk about how watching Thor Ragnarok and then Infinity War afterwards, I was really surprised at how perfectly Thor Ragnarok and Infinity War and then Endgame track the New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and then Return of the Jedi dynamic, where it's like you have this over-the-top, almost epic fairy tale that's a little bit silly but a lot of fun that ends with, you know, hooray, we blew up the Death Star / saved Asgard, and then opens with like, psych, no you didn't, you're in a really bad place and the bad guys are coming, and then you know, has this redemptive third thing in there.
I'll be interesting to see what the Ewok analog is for Endgame.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I don't know if there will be. New teaser for Toy Story 4 was released showing Woody and Bo Peep. We haven't seen Bo Peep since Toy Story 2 at an amusement park with Buzz Lightyear attached to a wall of prizes at one of the games. He's being taunted by Key and Peele as Ducky and Bunny. Toy Story 4 coming June 21st.
So this is more what I assume to be totally original content, selling the attitude, but not necessary, and maybe the set pieces, but not the necessary actual story of Toy Story 4.
It's really hard to tell, isn't it?
Like, yeah.
I don't know how this fits with the idea of Bonnie being the one who has the toys now. unless she had, they went to an amusement park and she had to go win them back or something, or like you say, is this just a little set piece created specifically for promotion? We'll find out June 21st, I guess.
Yeah.
John Favreau posted a picture of what looks very much like R5-D4 from the set of The Mandalorian. By all accounts, Mandalorian is happening 7 or so years after A New Hope. So R5-D4 apparently got his motivator fixed.
Yeah. Also, the only reason we know R5-D4 is because of the action figures and for me later on the customizable card game in the early 90s. But it occurs to me that the way we feel about droids is the way my kids feel about Pokemon. Like they know all the names. Like I could tell you about Momonde Dawn, and I can, you know, regale you with tales of Bossk from the extended universe. But it's like, how weird that such a minor nothing of a character has so much real estate in our minds.
Yeah, no, and R5-D4, like you say, in the film, never gets a name.
Right,
is on for 2 seconds and is really just there to blow up so that R2 gets purchased by Uncle Owen. Spoiler, but when he became an action figure, I fell in love with him. I still have a soft spot for R5-D4. Because we had like 4 R2-D2s because they kept breaking and my parents would buy new ones. But we only had 1 R5-D4 and I cherished it and took good care of it. So, I think there's nostalgia plus the Pokemon thing that you're talking about that made people crazy excited. And honestly, the fact that Jon Favreau knows that and used that in promotion of The Mandalorian, gives me a good feeling.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm already pretty bullish on this property. And hearing that only reinforces it.
Zack Snyder is going to make a zombie heist movie called Army of the Dead for Netflix. Snyder told The Hollywood Reporter, "No one's ever let me completely loose."
I think we let you lose when you made Batman vs. Superman. No? No.
A lot of people disagree that Snyder's never been let loose, but apparently he doesn't feel like he has. Shooting starts this summer. And interestingly, apparently this was a movie that the WB had. And when they say the WB in this Engadget article, I'm assuming they mean Warner Brothers Studios, not the old WB television network. interesting Netflix picking up a shelved movie. I imagine they'll start doing that more often too.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about what we've had our eyes on. Brian, what you been looking at?
Of course, The Usual Suspects, which we will talk about in spoiler in time, which include Dirk Gently and Counterpart. But in addition to that, you got me, Netflix. Normally, I'm pretty good at tuning out your trailers. But this one for Russian Doll got me watching. It's got the redhead from Orange is the New Black. I got 2 episodes in. It's a Groundhog Day story, which apparently is a genre now that we should all get comfortable with a billion things doing. And
Groundhog Day was just a couple days ago. So perfect timing.
Also, I found myself strangely hate watching the latest season of Arrested Development. It's nonsense. It's garbage. They spend fully 20% of each episode explaining to you why the scene you're about to see is good, based on how hard the writers work to wedge it in with a bunch of crap I'd already forgotten about.
It's bad.
It's awful.
It's a half a season. It's not. There's not even like a season resolution because they split it up like Kimmy Schmidt. Which, by the way, the Kimmy Schmidt episodes, the finales that just came out, good. Kimmy Schmidt's still good, maybe. But yeah, the rest of development's bad.
All right. You know, I never watched this, and now I'm pretty sure I'm not.
Watch it, have you ever wondered if it's possible for Arrested Development to be just terrible?
To be bad. Right.
Gather around and gawk right. with me.
What would a bad Arrested Development look like? Oh, here we go.
Yeah.
And Bryce, I know you watched Russian Doll too.
Yeah, I actually finished it today. I think Russian Doll, I finished it while we had a break between the shows today. I think Russian Doll's ending is...
Sticks the landing?
I think it's pretty good. They're not setting up like a second season. It doesn't feel like a big cliffhanger thing. So I think it's probably worth... And it's a very short watch. It's like 8 half-hour episodes. Like, that is a very low investment, I think, for a long Groundhog Day movie.
Now, my vacation last week was with my sister-in-law and her husband and 2-year-old, which meant that every evening was eat at 6 o'clock, put the 2-year-old to bed with some stories, and then decide what we're going to do with the rest of our evening. And what we decided to do was watch Kingdom on Netflix. It's 6 episodes long. It's a Korean series from the same guy who did Last Train to Busan. It's also zombies like Last Train to Busan, but it's set in ancient Korea. So in the Joseon Empire, where the emperor has been infected and is a zombie, and his ministers are trying to cover it up because they want to maintain power. And the crown prince kind of suspects something's going on, but doesn't really know, and gets busted trying to oust the emperor, and has to run away into the town where the zombie infection goes next. That's all like early in episode one. And it's great. It's, you know, I didn't think I was in for a zombie movie or a zombie series again after this, but it's well paced, well told. My 75-year-old father-in-law was into it, as were the rest of us. So I can't recommend it enough. Plus 6 episodes. So you're not committing to some long, you know, 20-episode arc here. It's just 6 episodes, although it does have a season 2 that has been green light for production.
Right on.
Kingdom is the name of it. And Bryce, what should we be on the lookout for?
Hey, we got a recommendation in our email for Bodyguard fans. Mark wrote us saying, if you like Bodyguard and are wanting more than the one season, give a try to Line of Duty. It is by the same creator. It's the same styling it's the same dramatic styling, plus Lenny James is truly great. Hey, thank you, Mark. Yeah, it looks like a Line of Duty is a rather well-received and highly awarded procedural from the UK. There are 4 seasons that are streaming now in the US on Hulu, Netflix in the UK. So remember, it's always a good idea to check for justwatch.com to see where some of these recommendations are in your country. But this looks pretty good. This trailer that I found for season 4 has Maeve in it from Westworld. Tandy Newton. I think she's the central character in this.
You mean from Solo?
Solo too. So Line of Duty. Hey, check it out.
All right. Excellent. Got something we should be on the lookout for? Email us cordkillers@gmail.com. Now, Brian.
Yep.
What else have you got going on?
Man, a lot of stuff's going on. But, we do the Mono Rogue channel. We do Scam Nation. We're evolving like a Pokemon to pick up that thread from Scam School to Scam Nation. We just had a brand new episode. One of the exciting things is that now that we're launching the new property of Scam Nation, the focus is on getting right to the point. Let the content be the star. And these episodes, when the material was covered in Scam School, it's probably like a half hour to 40 minutes of time, and a lot of it is just process, getting ready to get ready. This whole episode, 6 minutes long, gets right to the point, shows you 3 badass match tricks that you're able to do. If it's been a while since you've looked at some Scam School episode, give us a look. Head on over to youtube.com/scamschool, check out the last 4 or 5 episodes of Scam Nation. Let us know what you like and what you'd like to see more of.
Ah, the human chimney is back. Love it. Folks, let's move on to the front lines.
Front lines!
Charter beat its quarterly revenue estimates by adding 289,000 residential internet customers. That offset the loss of 36,000 residential video customers. Now, that may not surprise you, but how about this one? AT&T announced that DirecTV Now, not DirecTV the satellite, it lost subscribers too, but DirecTV Now, its online service, lost 267,000 subscribers last quarter. CEO Randall Stephenson said the loss was expected as it phased out promotional pricing, which applies to about 500,000 subscribers. So he's trying to say, hey, it's a victory. We stopped giving 500,000 people a discount, and we kept almost half of them.
Well, that's one of the things about kicking the can down the road, right? Like when you launch, it's tempting to use those price discretions to get a bunch of people in the door, but you're not building real loyalty. You're not building, you know, real interest. And then the moment the price goes up, you lose half of them.
Yeah, and so I think, you know, obviously, the CEO of AT&T is going to spin this as hard as possible, but he has a point. And I think the next quarter will be telling, like, okay, do you continue to lose at high rates, or was it really just that one-time promotional thing, and now you've kept everybody because they like your service?
Hulu said it will start showing static ads when you pause video starting this spring. Hulu says the ads are designed to be non-intrusive, starting with ads from Charmin and Coca-Cola. The ads will only show on Hulu's lowest price tier, which is the one that has ads in the streams as well. I gotta tell you, man, reading this gives me a weird sense of smug satisfaction for having, you know, jumped over the tier. Like, go ahead, cover everything with ads. I'm in the ad-free tier.
And honestly, I think these are not even as bad as I thought they would be. They're static. They just sit there on the screen till you press play again, and then they go away. I've seen similar things in other situations. So even if you have the ad level, you're probably not even going to notice it. And I like that they're using context appropriate advertisers, because when you pause, you're probably going to get a drink or to the bathroom.
Oh, so that's
Charmin,
pretty good, actually.
Coca-Cola, yeah, pretty smart.
Yeah, no, the return of banner ads. Thank you, yeah, internet.
Right. Dragon Media has agreed to shut down its Dragon Box service and pay $14.5 million in damages to a consortium of companies, including Netflix, Amazon, Columbia Pictures, Disney, Paramount Pictures, 20th Century Fox, Universal, and Warner Brothers. This is an example of one of those boxes that occasionally people write to us and ask, hey, what about this service? It provides me unlimited television for this low price. And we say, maybe not the most reliable thing and maybe not legal. Well, Dragon Box has been determined to have at least settled out of court to say we're not going to make our service anymore. The company sued Dragon Media, claiming the company provided custom software with a bunch of Kodi add-ons. They even changed to some non-Kodi stuff, but they still got busted for that. And the claim was that they were helping users obtain copyright infringing content. The complaint said defendants provide customers with over 80 add-ons as part of their suite of Dragon Media add-ons to access all of the unlimited shows, movies, and live sporting events. The alliance of companies previously shut down the Tick Box in September. So they're one after the other going after the more popular of these kinds of boxes.
And each one of these victories sets up a legal precedent that only makes the next one easier for them to shut down, right?
And it's basically saying, look, you can provide access to apps. You can leave a Kodi is not illegal. You can have add-ons, but you can't market a box that says we'll give you everything for a low price or free, because then you're inducing, especially if you provide the add-ons that are copyright infringing as part of your software install.
Amazon's X-ray feature, which uses IMDb to deliver contextual information when you pause or swipe up during a video, is now available on the Prime Video app for Apple TV. It's not supported on all videos, though. I got to tell you, man, I have become addicted to this thing. I get frustrated now with Netflix because when I see an actor, I'm like, where do I know that guy from? And I bring the cursor up and I hit pause and it's just like a pause display, like not even an ad, where's the list of all the characters and where else I've seen them before?
Well, and I'll be honest, like I often pull up IMDb when watching something that doesn't have this because I want to find out. And it's so, I used to think, well, what's the big deal? But it is so much more distracting to have to look up and maybe pause. You're going to pause anyway. Wouldn't it be nice to just say, oh, that's who that is?
Just give me the answer right away. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Viacom has launched a service called MTV Play in the UK. It offers the MTV channel live, as well as on-demand access to shows like Teen Mom UK and Geordie Shore for £3.99 a month. So this is MTV a la carte in the UK. Viacom also offers a service called MTV Plus as an add-on channel to Prime Video in Austria and Germany.
My goodness, think of how monumental MTV was to the countercultural movement of the early 90s or whatever. And then think of now what their brand is worth and what it means to teenagers. Like how many people do you think are even super stoked to buy this for
I don't have a good sense of that, right? The MTV Music Awards are still buzzy. I still see people talking about what happens on them. And there are some popular shows on MTV here in the US. I don't know how popular Geordie Shore or Teen Mom UK is in the UK. But I think it is interesting that Viacom is not sitting on its duff, right? Viacom pulled all of its channels from PlayStation View and a few other services like Sling, but they're going out into the world in other ways. And I guess trying to keep control of their content there.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to the dispatches from the front. Wabbit Magic wrote a note for Bryce saying, you probably have it already, but just in case you didn't, check out epguides.com. It's a good site you can use for episode lists. That's the main site I use to look up episodes. He heard us discussing whether The Good Place was episode 12 or 13. I think it was in between shows on the Twitch stream. Mm-hmm. I looked it up on EpGuides, and it said the episode we were talking about was episode 13. So it's sort of a definitive guide to episode numbers.
But I will say this doesn't solve The Good Place problem, which is that those first two episodes are always bundled together on Hulu, on the VOD services, and on Netflix when it comes out later, which messes up the numbering also. So
on Netflix and Hulu, they're episode 12,
right,
but they're
right.
actually episode 13.
Yeah. This is a good resource. This looks like a good website, but this doesn't sound like a good place.
Still annoyed. Meanwhile, William writes us saying 90% of his TV watching is with a TiVo and antenna. The DVR and Skip is the best. He uses Netflix, Amazon, YouTube, Plex apps on the TiVo. He has all the others, Apple TV, Roku, Fire Stick, and Apple TV is the second way he watches. But I'll tell you what, man, got a lot of emails from dedicated TiVo fans.
Yeah, thanks for all those emails. There definitely are a bunch of you out there. Also got some emails about The Expanse coming to Prime Video. Yvonne in Reno said, today you answered the very question I've been meaning to email you. When is season 3 of The Expanse hitting Prime? I've been putting off buying the season to save dollars, and thanks to Cord Killers, I can save that money. So you can have it. Thank you, Yvonne. Just joined your Patreon, which I should have done a while ago. Also glad to hear Sarah's one notch deeper than the other podcast analysis of the Firefest issue and the accountability of paid influencers. Thank you, Yvonne. And in a related note, Cliff noted that The Expanse seasons 1, 2, and 3 are all in 4K on Prime Video, and he says they look pretty darn good.
Yeah. And then finally, we got an email from Joel saying, hey, gang, long story short, Tech Savvy TV, that's TekSavvy TV, the base package, this is a Canadian offering, I believe, it's $20, tons of channel pack add-ons that range from $6 to $20 extra, available on Android boxes, iOS, Amazon Fire devices, and Apple TV, Roku, and game consoles coming soon. We'll attach screenshots. Tech Savvy is the best ISP in Canada, hometown bias. He says they just launched their IPTV service to customers in Chatham, Kent, where they're based, a small town between Windsor and London. He says you think so you can only access it when logged into your Tech Savvy My Account control panel. Chatham only for now, but then Ottawa and Toronto is the rumor he hears. Then the world of Canada. Thank you very much, Joel.
Yeah, Joel. It's funny. When I started reading this email, I thought, is this one of those Android boxes like we were talking about from Dragon Media? And it turns out, no, this is a legit service from a legitimate ISP. So that's how good it is. It felt too good to be true. Thank you. Thank you, Joel. And thank you, everyone, for supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/cordkillers, and for hanging out with us. Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live on twitch.tv/nightattack, which is also carried on diamondclub.tv Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. And, oh, don't you worry, we will be back to cut your cord again next week.
Hey, guys, Brian and Tom here, and it's just the same old message. At the end of the credits, just like always.
That's right, Brian. Nothing new here except your name showing up.
Oh my gosh, I've got a name.
You just supported us on Patreon.
Yeah, all those $5 donors, look at that. That's your name in pixels. We're going to make you famous, kid. Put your
name
in pixels on the internet.
There's some classic names in there. But some of you are new. Some of you aren't there. It's sad. What can they do, Brian?
I mean, they could go to patreon.com/cordkillers and pledge $5 an episode to be one of these amazing people. Like this one.
Amazing.
Oh, look at that name right there.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.